Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
So Melanie, as we were talking about what we're going to talk about on the show before, we were saying, doesn't it feel like we just recorded another show? Like, where did the week go? We didn't do anything. We hardly anything. This
was a boring week.
Yeah. And we haven't been our usual gadabout, go out and places sells because, well, like everybody else, gas is too darn expensive. You just don't feel as free to just head out.
Right. To places. There's a program that I was kind of interested in doing, like at Duxbury Beach, that we've done in the past, but it's on Tuesdays and Thursdays, and this past week we had appointments on those days, so that wasn't happening either.
Yeah. Yeah. It's been brutally hot for the past few weeks. We've had a lot of appointments.
Yeah.
And gas. So, but we did have one notable outing, and that was last night. So in the next town over from us, the small city of Brockton, Massachusetts, they have a minor league baseball team, the Brockton Rocks. And in true baseball fashion, it's spelled ROX, like rocks and socks and locks.
Okay, because CK doesn't exist in baseball world.
Not in baseball team names.
Okay.
Hey, in a suburb of Boston where they have the Red Sox with an X, you're going to have the Rocks with an X.
All right.
So our scout troops, the boys troops and the girls troop, they got a bunch of tickets, and so we were all invited to go, and our troops were the color guard. I'm trying to think of the word for it. The color guard for the national anthem. So they, and Bella was one of them. She carried the troop flag, and they stood out in the field with the players during the playing of the national anthem and everything. It was really cool. It was really nice. It's actually a really fun little ballpark. It's the Collegiate Baseball League, so it's not even part of the Major League Baseball farm system. Do you know how that works?
Sort of vaguely, kind of.
So Major League Baseball teams, they get their players usually from what they call farm teams, which are minor league teams at different levels. And the highest level is the AAA, and then you have AA, and you have single A. Then there's a bunch of these independent leagues out there where they're just guys who play, and they're not really affiliated. So, like, you went to the Portland Sea Dogs. Yeah, you were the Portland Sea Dogs with us ages ago. Remember my sister Francesca's birthday? We rented, like, a box.
Yes.
I think Bella was a baby then.
Bella was a newborn.
Yeah. So Portland Sea Dogs are the AA affiliate for the Red Sox. And now what used to be the Pawtucket Red Sox are now the Worcester Red Sox. They call them the Woo Sox, and that's just wrong. But anyway, I love minor league baseball. Like, I'm not a huge baseball fan. Like, I enjoy baseball, and I'll sometimes watch Major League Baseball. I don't watch it nearly as much now that we're married as I used to. This is a lot of games. I love listening to it on the radio too, but and I've been to the Red Sox several times.
I've seen three baseball games, because you just reminded me of the
Sea Dogs.
Sea Dogs. I've been to one Red Sox game at Fenway Park and one Texas Rangers game at the ballpark in Arlington,
which doesn't exist anymore, I think.
I know. It was new, which boggles my mind. I've been there once, and it was relatively new when I went.
Yes.
And now it's gone.
They keep tearing them down. Whereas Fenway is over 100 years old. It's like 112 years old now. I've been to a bunch of games at Fenway. My friend Paul, his sister has I don't know if she still has them, season tickets behind home plate. Like eight rows up. It was the most phenomenal seats, and we got to use them once. It was awesome. What a great gift that was. But anyway, but I almost kind of prefer going to the minor league parks because they're smaller, they're more family friendly in one sense, they're more intimate. Mm-hmm. So our seats were like in the third row behind home plate. So you have the area right behind home plate and we're in the third row back. You could see everything. And these guys, the poor playing are, you know, they're playing for the love of the game. You know, they, and you know, they, but the hope that maybe someday they'll be major league players, but you know, they're at a pretty low level. It's collegiate baseball. So these are college baseball players who in the summer go play in these leagues. That's pretty much how it works. So, none of our kids know anything about baseball, really.
No, you never watch baseball with them.
No. I mean, like I said, this hasn't been a thing we do. I haven't really watched games much. We watch football, but that's about it. So, I had Bella, Lucy, Anthony, and Ben. Sophie wasn't up for going and you stayed home with her. And so it was kind of fun. Explain to them how it worked. You know, okay, this is good. The pitcher and his team are on the field and they're throwing the ball to the batter and the batters come up one at a time. And this is what a strike is. This is what a ball is. This is what a walk is. You know, that's a single, a double. The ball is a foul.
It's funny that our kids don't know that, like total homeschooled kids, because I'm as little as I know about sports. I don't mean, I don't watch it, but I played all these games in PE class in school.
Right.
Like I played baseball and.
Well, they see it as important to teach kids how these major league sports work. I think that's a part of functioning society. Like that's the thing is our kids, a lot of homeschool kids will know what baseball is because they probably play in little league. Like our kids aren't right. even in organized sports. So it's just not something that they know. So, but they had a blast. We got some ballpark food and, it's like 20 minutes from door to door. Like I got in the car, drove 20 minutes. It's right by Our Lady of Lourdes Church.
Oh,
it's like right. It's like across the street. It's like it's right behind it. Like now that I know where it is, when next time we go to Our Lady of Lourdes, I'll be able to say it's right there. Like it's, oh, okay. it's literally like a hop, skip and a jump and free parking. The tickets are, I guess, $10. You know, the food was, you know, food at such things. They're expensive, but it wasn't too bad. I think like a burger was $3.50, $4.
That's not too bad.
Not too bad. I mean, Fenway is way more expensive. Oh, yeah. There's no way I could afford to take our family to Fenway Park. That would be a $300 day. Easy. Tickets, food, transportation and parking or whatever, you know, it just would be ridiculous. But we could go like seven of us, $70 for tickets and maybe another $50 for food. You know, if you don't go crazy with food, that's doable. I mean, it's not something we do every day, but that's like an outing that we would normally take for a lot of things. Taking seven people anywhere is expensive. So really fun, beautiful night. It was a gorgeous night, was not hot, nice breeze, always helps when the home team wins. That was good. The team was winning. So that's another reason why I think our kids had so much fun. Minor league. The other thing about minor league ballparks is they always have, shtick, various stuff going on between innings. They have like a guy in a silly suit with a microphone throwing candy and t-shirts into the crowd. They have a mascot, a kangaroo named KO. That's the team mascot. You know, they have a race with a kid around the bases, or, you know, they have just all this silly, funny stuff in between innings to keep the crowd hyped and to just make it a fun time for the kids. Lots and lots and lots of kids. That was the nice thing about it. So, good time. I had forgotten how much I enjoyed going to minor league games. I've been to minor league games. I went to see the Virginia Tides ages ago, you know, 20 some odd years ago when I was down there once with friends, Virginia Beach. And I'm trying to think where else I've been to minor league. I've been to several minor league parks, but it's always good. And just to have one right here. Oh, they're called the Brockton Rocks. I didn't explain that. Mm-hmm. The famed boxer, Rocky Marciano, is from Brockton.
Oh.
So Rocky Rocks, they're the kangaroo is their mascot. boxing kangaroos.
Oh, I see. I see. This actually does make sense.
Yeah, his name is KO, the kangaroo.
Oh, KO, like knockout.
Like knockout, yeah. Oh, so it all makes sense. It all makes sense. Funny story, okay? I wear a multi-tool on my belt where, you know, I just have it with me all the time. I'm using it a dozen times a day. It's got a knife on it, you know, but it's got tools and stuff. So I didn't think anything about it as we're going there. And they're wanding, you know, metal detector, wanding people as they go. And I'm like, oh, great. I'm going to have to turn around, go back to the car, leave my multi-tool there. And he wands me. It doesn't appear to go off, but he's like, what's in your pockets? And I said, my precious. No, I said, what's he got in his pockets? Wallet and keys. He's like, can you take it out? So I take it out. Gigantic key ring, wallet. I got my eyeglasses case because I had my sunglasses on. Battery for my phone, that sort of stuff. Doesn't say anything about the knife, like the multi-tool.
Maybe he didn't see the knife?
I guess, but that doesn't fill me with confidence at their security measures. I mean, on the one hand, I'm like, glad I didn't have to go back to the car, but the other hand, I'm like, hey, dude, you totally missed this. I didn't say anything, but it's just kind of funny. Anyway, wonderful thing. If you ever get a chance, if it's not something you've ever done, check it out. Go to a minor league ball game. I don't think other sports there are minor league or semi pro or pro, you know, football teams and even like rugby or lacrosse teams. But minor league baseball is an institution and it's really great. It's a real slice of Americana. It's really something everyone should do once in their life. It's fine, you know, when you get a chance, if you're near one. Just go, you know, for fun, because even if you don't know a lot about baseball. So I have this great book here written by the late Jerry Remy on explaining baseball, how it works. I got it years ago when I was getting into baseball and having played as a kid, but not really paid attention again until I was an adult. And it's a great book. And I told the kids that if anybody wants to learn more, I'd be happy to lend it to them. So awesome. So let's talk about food.
Food.
We've been busy with food. Okay, so we didn't go out a lot of places, so we've apparently been cooking. And I started with a Thai mango chicken curry. So a little bit of a story with that. We've been making... I first made a Thai curry years ago. Like, maybe when we were even first married. Maybe even before we were married. Because I used to make Indian curries before we were married. I know that.
Right.
I don't remember the first time I made the Thai chicken curry. But it's a really good...
cool, pretty sure it was after we were married.
Probably. But this was still at Linden Street. So it was early on. Anyway, I'm trying to find the actual recipe I used. Thai chicken curry. Sorry. This is never a great... kind of, there it is. Okay. So this was from our short-lived food blog that we did, our cooking blog that we did. So it starts with coconut milk, can of coconut milk, unsweetened, please. do not use sweetened coconut milk in this because it is not a dessert. You do, that'd be very different. Not shaken. Okay. That's important. What you're going to do is you're going to open up the can and spoon off about a cup of the top layer of the cream. Because coconut milk in a can will be like the watery stuff, the coconut water, and then the coconut cream up top. If you mix it up, it becomes coconut milk. But you want to, it's kind of like regular milk. You want to scoop off the cream, okay? Then you have Thai curry paste. You can use red or green. It's all the same. I like to use red, but you can use either one. And you're going to put those both in the pan, two tablespoons of the red curry paste one tablespoon of red curry paste to one cup of the coconut cream. And then you're going to put it in a big Dutch oven and you're going to cook it and you're going to stir it and cook it until it separates and breaks down. The coconut cream will break down and like it's going to become kind of almost grainy and the oil will come out of it. And that's good because then it will start to fry. And you kind of fry up and that's really the flavor that you're going to get out of it. And then it adds fish sauce and brown sugar. I use boneless, skinless chicken breasts and this You can add all kinds of vegetables, carrots, celery, mushrooms, bell pepper. I think I added some zucchini to this one, whatever you got. And then I like to throw in a chili pepper, like stem seeded and quartered. So you want it like big chunks of it. That'll go there. And then once it's done cooking, you add lime juice, mint and basil. And if you don't have mint and basil, you can add cilantro too. That works too. And I know it's not your favorite.
No.
So I don't make it very often. I really enjoy it, but
I honestly think that I would probably like it better if you added the coconut milk at the end and you had more of the creamy coconut taste. I think I always find it slightly disappointing because I want more of that creamy mouthfeel, and it's not there. Like, what if you added like some more coconut cream at the end to like finish it off?
So hold back some of the coconut cream because you don't use all the coconut cream. So hold back some of the coconut cream to the very end and add it in just like you add yogurt at the very end of Indian curry cooking.
Right. Because I think what I don't like about it what I'm missing is that coconut cream creamy mouthfeel. And the more coconut taste, like I feel like the coconut taste kind of cooks out and it's not really there.
Yeah, it's not very coconutty. No, that's you're right. Oh, you added some frozen mango chunks to this one.
Yes.
That was a good addition. That was tasty.
See, way back when we lived in Salem, like before we were married, there was a Thai restaurant that we used to go to all the time, and they had this mango curry, and it was my favorite thing on their menu. So I always ordered the mango curry, and
I remember good. That place. Yeah, that was good. That was a good type. There was two different Thai places. There was the one in the little mall.
No. The other one, and it delivered.
Yeah, the one downtown next to the smoke shop.
Yeah, it was good. They delivered, like I said. They had this great appetizer. They were like a fried dumpling. They called them golden triangles on the menu. And they were just kind of...
It was like heroin? the golden trade.
Golden triangle.
Okay, golden triangles. Okay. Yeah. I don't remember ever having tried that. But I do remember like getting takeout from there a few times. So, like the Thai beef was really good.
My roommates were very fond of
Thai beef basil. That's what I'm thinking of.
Yeah. My roommates were very fond of that restaurant, and we got takeout quite a bit.
Yeah. Salem. Okay. Slight tangent.
Digression.
Salem was really great for restaurants.
It was.
I mean, everything was like, it was a downtown area. And there were so many restaurants, and partly because it's a touristy town, but there was the Indian place. Remember that? Passage to India. And then there were, like I said, multiple Thai places. There was that soup place, the New England Soup Factory. Remember that? There was relatively...
I thought the Soup Factory was like after we moved out.
It was in town. I remember going there. I don't know. Like it was there when we were living either there or in Peabody. But yeah, I mean, it was there. I remember going several times. It was relatively late, though. Yes. But I love soup. So the soup place and then seafood places. And I mean, it was like lousy with restaurants and just all kinds of great stuff. Two Irish pubs, not one, two Irish pubs. Although O'Neill's kind of became a college bar.
Yeah, it became more of a college
music bar.
Yeah.
Yeah. But McSwiggin's stayed true. And McSwiggin's was the location of our infamous first not date.
Right.
Which I've told the story of before. But yeah, there's so many great restaurants in Salem. That's one of the things I miss about Salem is just there was so much going on downtown and there was so many great places.
Yeah, I was really lucky in my choice of roommates because even though I was a poor graduate student when I first moved there, I had roommates who worked much better paid
decent jobs.
One of my roommates worked for Fidelity. And so she would often get bored and want to go out for dinner.
Because her boyfriend lived in New Jersey.
Yeah. And so she would invite me to, she'd be like, oh, I just want to go out to dinner. I can't afford to go out to dinner. Oh, I'll pay for you. So she bought me dinner all the time because she was bored and wanted to go out.
Nice.
It was a great deal for me.
That is a great deal.
I ate so much better than most grad students do because I had awesome roommates. So yeah. Thank you, Shanna, again.
Yeah, Salem was nice. I do kind of miss it. Now, the same things that made Salem that made Salem great like that also made Salem a pain in the neck because it was a touristy town, and for a couple months, especially in September, and then especially in October, it was almost unlivable because of the craziness. So, you know, you pay for it one way or the other. But yeah, I mean, I miss the North Shore of Boston. That was our stomping grounds. But anyway, so that was the Thai Mango chicken curry.
Mm-hmm. And a trip down memory lane.
Yes, an air trip down memory lane. Food is memory. I mean, that just really that really just emphasizes it, puts an exclamation point on that. Then you came up with another one, which you called a deconstructed egg roll, essentially. But it's a
egg roll in a bowl.
Egg roll in a bowl. Yeah. So you made this one.
Yes.
And so it's pork, right?
You take ground pork and you fry it up. And then you add, I'm trying to remember actually the order of things. I think I might have pulled the pork out.
Mm-hmm.
So basically then you saute onions and
onion, garlic.
And then I made like a garlic ginger paste. Actually, I added those to the sauce. You saute the onions, then you saute the cabbage, then you put the pork back in. And then, yeah, I basically took a page out of my Indian recipes and I used the immersion blender to grind up the ginger and garlic. I think mm-hmm. it's so much easier than grating them or mincing them.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to add any extra liquid. So I just put them in with the soy sauce and the vinegar.
Okay. Cider vinegar.
I use cider vinegar instead of rice wine vinegar because I was looking at two different pork recipes and one of them was for like a sweet and sour pork. And I kind of wanted more of that cider vinegar, sweet and sour flavor for this. So I just used the immersion blender to sort of make a paste. And then I added that at the end and you cook it with, I used some red pepper flakes and I used some brown sugar and honey. And it's got quite a bit of the cider vinegar. So basically what you're going for is like a sweet and sour taste.
Okay.
And then I served it with some fresh, chopped Napa cabbage, on the side so that you get
both the
cooked cabbage and the crunchy raw cabbage too. Cause I really like that crunchy mm-hmm. texture. It was supposed to have lime juice in it. I actually forgot to add the lime juice and I didn't think it missed it.
It would have been a nice bright note at the end there, but okay. Yeah, that was fine. The recipe that you saved also calls for carrots, but we were out of carrots, I think.
No, I had carrots. Actually.
Okay. You didn't mention carrots. You didn't mention.
I forgot the carrot.
Okay. I'm trying to think of anything else so in the sauce, did you use the chili garlic sauce in addition?
Oh, I did. Yes.
In addition to garlic.
Yeah. Definitely want the chili garlic sauce for that little bright.
Yeah, that spicy, vinegary brightness that it adds.
In addition to the red pepper flakes. It doesn't matter. Use both.
Yeah. So I'll put links to the recipes. The recipe that I'll link to is not exactly the same. So, you know, if you want to mess around with a little bit.
Yeah, I didn't really rewrite or save the recipe I actually use because I was
yeah.
bouncing back and forth between two recipes. So.
But just, you know, these sorts of things they're good for, you know, playing with. You can move, you know, modify things a little bit here and there. You add this, take a little of that or whatever. They're forgiving. So yeah, give it a try. So that was the egg roll in a bowl. And then after we went to the farmer's market, we picked up some eggplant and actually we had some eggplant in the fridge from the store. Right.
The eggplant I used was actually the
store-bought stuff.
Eggplant that had been sitting in the refrigerator needing to be used.
So you made some caponata, which is a Sicilian sort of eggplant tomato relish almost.
Right.
It's sort of a hot salad.
It's kind of sweet and sour.
The classic Sicilian flavors, the agrodolce, sweet and sour. Yeah. Uh-huh.
And, so basically I like to roast my eggplant separately and not cook it in the pan. And then you add it to the pan near the end. So I sliced the eggplant into really good, thick, almost 2-inch slices. I peel it too. I never ever.
Always peel your eggplant. Yeah. Oh, please
do not leave the eggplant skin in. It's bitter and it will ruin your dish.
Yes.
So I skin the eggplant, cut it into big 2-inch thick round slices, and then I salted them and put them in a colander. And you really want to salt them.
It's not just for flavor.
It's also for texture.
Yeah.
The texture is so much better after it's salted. It pulls out the water and it leaves your eggplant really soft and creamy as opposed to thick and fibrous.
Yeah.
It's like magic. So I salted it for 10 minutes while I cut up the rest of the vegetables. And then I patted it dry because it will sweat. You want it in the colander over a bowl so that a lot of I got like a good quarter cup of liquid off of the eggplant.
And then you pat them dry to get even more off. Yeah.
You pat them dry and then you brush them with olive oil on both sides. And then I roast them in the oven for about 20 minutes per side, 15 minutes per side.
At 350?
No, 425. Okay. You want to get a nice, good golden brown color on them. And you want to turn them over about halfway through cooking.
Okay.
So you brown them on both sides. And then you take them out and you let them cool down. And then while your eggplant's cooking, put some red chili pepper flakes. I used a mixture of Aleppo and red pepper flakes in some olive oil and heat that up. Saute some onions, add some garlic, bell pepper. And let those get nice and soft. Then add some tomato paste. And then I cut some fresh tomatoes and I had some canned tomatoes too. So tomatoes. And then let that simmer and get really, really.
It's almost like a tomato sauce.
Yeah. And then I just kept adding wine and then letting it cook down and then adding some more wine and letting it cook down while my eggplants were cooking. So basically it was just kind of simmering. And when it started to get too dry, I would throw in some more white wine.
Okay.
And then at the end, I added some golden raisins for sweetness.
Classic Sicilian ingredient.
Some toasted pine nuts.
Yep.
And then then I chopped up the eggplant into small.
Very small.
Small dice. Very small dice.
I think it's better. Like a lot of caponata recipes have these big chunks of eggplant. I prefer the way I remember my aunt's making it was very small, like almost a spread, but yeah, go ahead.
Right. And then so you add the eggplant and then you want some sugar. I use brown sugar and honey and red wine vinegar. So what you're going for is like a nice balance of sweet, sour, and spicy.
Yes.
And then it should be really creamy and you should kind of be able to spoon it or spread it on chunks of bread.
Did you add basil?
Oh yeah, I added basil and oregano.
Okay.
I didn't have fresh, so I added dried. You can also add.
We have fresh basil, but dried oregano.
I just used dried basil.
Since you're cooking so long, you might as well use the dried.
You can also add.
Olives?
Oh, yeah, olives. How could I forget? I didn't have capers, so I didn't add capers, but you do. I added like a good cup of Manzanilla olives plus their brine.
Yes, always add the brine. Olive brine, pickle brine, brines are magic. We've said this before, I think, but
magic flavor.
They're magic flavor enhancers.
So, and then just cook it a little bit more at the end, but you don't really want to cook it too much. You don't need to cook it too much after you've added, just to get the eggplant incorporated and the flavors incorporated. So good.
Yeah.
So
we had baguette from the farmer's market and man, a spread on. I had some of that. We both had some of that for lunch today.
None of the kids will eat it. I don't understand why. Even the kids who usually like kind of spicy tomato-y dishes, they're like, ew, it's got eggplant in it. That can't possibly be good. I'm not even going to try it.
You don't know what you're missing. You don't know. I'm still searching for this thing that my aunt made once when I was Anthony's age, when I was like, 10. And my dad took us over to her house once, my Auntie Jenny. And I remember it wasn't, I thought it was caponata. The way my dad called it, it was something like gabagaliwi, which, there's probably a G and a Z in there somewhere. The way Italians mush everything together in their dialect. But I do know it had olives and it had celery and it was so.
Oh, right. I forgot the caponata had celery in it.
Did it? Okay. Yeah. That's right. So when I was trying to find that recipe, that's when I kind of stumbled on the caponata train, and we've been making that ever since. But I still want to find that recipe that my aunt is gone now, so I can't ask her for, you know, about it. But, you know, well, maybe someday I'll find somebody who knows something about it. It could be just like something from the villa, you know, Augusta, the village they were from or whatever, but who knows. So that's what we've been cooking. So we've been eating well this week, even if we didn't go anywhere.
That's true.
So let's talk about some things we've been watching. I assume you haven't finished a book yet because you didn't say anything about books.
I have been just pegging away very slowly at a few books. I've been reading a lot more poetry this week. I finally found I had lost my brand new copy, a review copy of A. Stalling's new collection of selected poems called This Afterlife. And it's really, really good. I'm listening to the audiobook of Eugene Vodolazkin's Solovyev and Larionov, and I don't like it as much as his later books. It's okay.
And I've been working through Mark Greene's new novel called Armored. I'll have more to say about that when I finish it, which I hope will finish it in this coming week because I'm getting close to it. Mark Greene is the author of the Gray Man series, which recently came out as a big budget Netflix movie. And so now he's got this new series as well. I think it's going to be a series. So someone said that they looked like a series on Amazon and like called it Book One. So who knows? It could just be Amazon, but it's pretty good. Pretty good. I don't like it as much as his Gray Man series yet, but we'll see how that goes. But I did finish watching The Terminal List, which is the Terminal List, two words. I always have to say that because it sounds like it's the Terminalist, like it's a job, like I'm a terminalist. No, The Terminal List, starring Chris Pratt on Amazon Prime, from the book by Jack Carr. And I mentioned it last week. It's the recap. It's about a Navy SEAL who a mission in Syria goes wrong. His entire team gets killed. He comes back and things keep going wrong from there. And it looks like someone's trying to frame him, and he's having dementia, delusions. And the first couple episodes, you really don't know what's real and what isn't.
Right.
But as I mentioned, but after the first few episodes, that goes away. That the whole, like, he's still having delusional episodes, but the viewer knows what's real and what isn't. So it becomes clearer. It is very violent. Obviously, he's a man on a mission of vengeance. I do like the twists and turns it takes. There is a surprise twist at the end that I won't reveal, but I totally called it in the second episode.
I'm like shaking my head.
Oh, that person is behind it.
Yeah, you know, Isabella's starting to, she was very proud of herself because she realized that a character was going to betray everyone, and she called it, and she was so thrilled with herself.
That's my girl. So. Doesn't fall far from the tree. And they, I thought, like, that I was certain that this was clearly going to be a one-shot season. There's no way that they can, that they're going to have a second season. You know, like, he's got this brain tumor. He's dying. You know, that's kind of the whole thing. That was the shtick from the beginning, is he's got this tumor in his brain this brain injury that is going to kill him. But the way it ends, it totally opens up the door to another season. And in fact,
is that spoilery?
No, because also the books, there's a book series. There's a series with this character. So the book ends and then there's more books with this. That continue.
Okay.
It's not spoilery, except just that somebody survives to continue on, I guess. You know, a character survives, but so it's interesting.
Not necessarily the main character.
I'm not saying whether it is or isn't, but somebody does survive to carry on afterward. But they kind of open the door at the end, and I'm like, wait, what is that a reference to? Did I miss something? I actually had to go online to look it up, and like someone was like, oh, no, this is blah, 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 blah. I'm like, oh, they must be getting ready to do another season. So it was good. It's really, in one sense, it's this idea of in a world of powerful politicians and corporations and the ultra wealthy who can be above the law, they can get away with anything, right? There's one, like the one man who has these kinds of skills can get justice, his kind of justice, you know, the only justice that can be brought to them is the violence that he brings to them. And I don't necessarily agree with that, obviously, but it's an interesting story, and it's an interesting story of a man of honor. And because apart from some contractors, like private military contractors, like, you know, soldiers for hire, everybody who he kills is a bad guy. Like, is a bad guy. Like, he takes pains to avoid civilian casualties or shooting cops or, you know, other agents and that sort of stuff. So it's really, he's a man of honor, and he's also a man seeking justice. He's in pain. He's a dad and a husband who is in pain and is seeking justice for what has been done. So I really enjoyed it. Chris Pratt, like, even in his Guardians of the Galaxy or in the Jurassic movies, there's still a bit of the funny man in that.
Mm-hmm.
There is no funny man in this. This is a straight up serious action figure, action hero in this. And he does a good job. He does a really good job with it. I buy it the whole way. So, it's good. Don't tick off Navy SEALs. Just telling you now, don't tick off Navy SEALs and make them come for you, because you're done. Anyway, so that was the Terminalist on Amazon Prime. A lot of people talking about it, well-deserved. And I think it's really good. Then we finished watching the first season of Loki.
Yes.
Yeah, with the kids today. And I say first season because they actually, at the end, I think that post or mid-credit scene was added. I don't think that was there when we watched it.
If it was there, we did not stop and we did not see it. We turned it off.
I guess, yeah, because they had a post-credit scene that you'll see Loki in season two. Loki will be back in season two or something like that, which is good because there's lots of explaining to do.
Lots of explaining to do.
You and I both loved the series when we first watched it.
I enjoyed it. Tom Hiddleston is fun to watch. I didn't think that the story made, and then
Sylvie.
The actor who plays Mobius, whose name I'm blanking on.
Now you made me blank.
Owen Wilson.
Owen Wilson.
Thank you. I love Owen Wilson. Owen Wilson is great. I mean, and the chemistry between Owen Wilson and
Tom Hiddleston
was so fun.
Yes.
I really enjoyed that. The storyline, the plotting, it was okay.
It's a little confusing. Like, as anything is with time travel and loops and multiverse stuff, it can be confusing and hard, even just hard to portray. And my big problem with the season and is the last episode, because more than anything else Marvel so far that I've watched, this relies heavily on the viewer knowing something about from the comics, because you're like, who is this guy? Why does he matter? What's he talking about?
I believe him?
Right. And if you don't know, like, I only learned about it when I listened to Secrets of Movies and TV Shows afterward, when the comics experts were talking about it on our podcast, who this guy was and what he was talking about and why, like, what's going on. So it was very, I found that last episode to be very confusing. Like, what's the point? What's going on here? Why is this the branching and the thing?
And do I trust this guy? Do I believe him? Is he just like spinning a load of like, how do you even know who to believe here?
Right. And it ends with lack of resolution. There is not, like, it's a, well, you know, you'll have to find out later in another Marvel movie or series, or maybe it's season two of Loki. Like, what's going on? Are we setting up the next big phase of Marvel? We don't know. They don't really tell us this. And in fact, none of what happens here has so far been followed up on in anything Marvel we've seen since then, as far as I can tell.
Right.
I don't think so. Maybe it's been hinted at in some things, but maybe not. So in any case, it just is. It's a sort of unsatisfying ending.
Yeah.
The kids, I think they enjoyed it.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah. So from here, next up is Scarlet Widow.
Black Widow.
Black Widow. Scarlet Witch, Black Widow. Black Widow.
Which I think is a really fun movie. I'm looking forward to watching that with the kids.
Oh, I think Yelena is one of the great additions.
Mm-hmm.
But Yelena's better in Hawkeye.
She is, but you really have to have seen Black Widow in order to understand who the heck she is.
Right. In order to appreciate her in Hawkeye, you got to watch her in Black Widow.
But Black Widow, I'm looking forward to seeing it again, because when we watched it the first time, I spent the first half hour of the movie being really confused and not actually realizing that the child was who the child was.
Right.
Which it took me a while to figure out what was going on. So I'm looking forward to watching it again, knowing how it ends, to be able to see how all the pieces are put together.
Plus Hopper in a Soviet prison again. Stranger Things reference. Red Guardian.
Missing out.
You haven't seen Stranger Things. No. So Black Widow's next. And then after that will be Shang-Chi.
Yes, I love Shang-Chi.
Shang-Chi is fun. That's a good one. I really like that. Michelle Yeoh is great in everything. So I'm looking forward to seeing her again. And then Hawkeye. We're skipping Eternals. We're skipping the What If series, the animated What If series. There are maybe a couple of things in that were worthwhile, I think, in the grand scheme of things. And I just don't think we need to spend much time on that. I mean, I suppose the Doctor Strange one of that one is what it kind of matters for Multiverse of Madness.
Right. But we haven't really decided if we're going to
watch. But we're not sure if the kids are going to watch Multiverse of Madness, which kind of I feel bad because it's kind of important to I feel like it's going to be important to what comes next. But I don't like what they did to Scarlet Witch in that anyway. So
maybe we can watch it.
We'll see. We'll see how it goes. Maybe we'll watch it again and stuff. Those two, Shang-Chi and Black Widow, and then Hawkeye, and then the Spider-Man, which you still haven't seen.
Nope. And Ms. Marvel.
And then Ms. Marvel. We're probably not going to watch Moon Knight because it really doesn't touch on anything outside of itself.
In which we could, you know, we can always go back and watch it if it turns out to
be important.
Right.
But it's kind of self-contained, but it's kind of violent. And
I really felt like there was a lot more kind of intense, scary content in Moon Knight that they'll probably be okay, but I just.
Yeah. Even Lucy was getting a little in the Loki was getting a little upset at the big smoke monster.
Yeah. So I just feel like Moon Knight, maybe we could even wait a year or two and then they might enjoy it more when they're older.
I think Eternals we could skip. In my own mind, I'm walling off Eternals as not really Marvel. I just didn't like it. And I don't think I don't want to sit through it again, honestly. It wasn't terrible, but it just, I don't know. It just didn't seem to fit well with the rest of everything else. And then the giant thing emerging from the middle of the earth. It was, come on. What else was there? I guess that's it so far. Ms. Marvel was the last thing. What's coming? There's stuff coming up, but I don't remember what it is. And then, of course, this Andor series is coming up later in August.
Right.
So that's going to be something we're going to start watching again with them. So that's what we've been watching. So let's move on. Talk about some stuff from Mass today. So the Mass readings for today, for this Sunday, the 18th Sunday in Ordinary Time. So it starts with the Ecclesiastes, Vanity of Vanities. And then we had the second reading is Paul to the Colossians, where he tells them, you know, put to death the parts of you that are earthly, immorality, impurity, passion, evil desire, and the greed that is idolatry, so on and so forth. And then the gospel, where someone tells Jesus, tell my brother to share the inheritance with me. And Jesus says, who appointed me as your judge and arbitrator? I think that's a very interesting response from Jesus, because that guy clearly says, like, my brother's being unjust.
And Jesus doesn't. I feel like it's not that Jesus doesn't care about injustice, but Jesus is kind of like, you're missing.
I wonder if Jesus is reading his heart. Because he follows it up with, take care to guard against all greed. Because maybe this dispute between the brothers was not about justice. It was about greed.
Right. Like maybe he's accusing his brother of being greedy, but maybe he himself is susceptible to greed.
Right. And
maybe he needs some purification of his own motives.
In Jewish inheritance law, did the older brother get everything and the younger siblings get nothing except by the older brother's largesse?
I don't remember
off the top of my head. But that's a possibility, too, that maybe he didn't have a right to expect anything from his brother. But Jesus responds, guard against all greed, for though one may be rich, one's life does not consist of possessions. And then he tells them the parable about the rich man who his land produced a bountiful harvest, an unusually large harvest, and his decision was to hoard his gain by building bigger barns and silos, and then after all that, died. And like they say, you can't take it with you. And one of the things that the church fathers have pointed out is the man's fault is not for having a bountiful harvest. That's, that's just being a good steward. It's for being greedy.
He could have, filled his barns and silos to fullness and saved up as much as he had and then given away the excess.
Taking everything that he needed and giving away the excess. Right.
And presumably his barns and silos are enough to cover as much as he expects to grow in any one year. So
even in a decent year, you probably, if you're a good steward of your land, you have barns big enough to hold not just what you get in a year that you expect, but even a little more for a year that may be a little extra. And so this year he had even more than that.
He had a super abundance. It was a super bumper crop year. He could have shared it with his neighbors. He could have
given away to the poor or whatever. Right.
Right. And he didn't. Also, it's not that he just is going to build another barn. He's going to tear down all of his barns and build a new one.
And build larger ones. And which is kind of presumptuous, because are you presuming you're going to have this super abundant harvest every year? Do you need those bigger, larger barns? So there's a bit of a sin of presumption here, I think, as well. As for you, you have so many good things stored up for many years. Eat, drink, be merry. And then God said to him, you fool, this night your life will be demanded of you. You fool. So Father Matt, our pastor, this time at this mass, which we haven't had in a long time, which is nice to hear him again. And one of the things, this was something I was thinking of before we get to what he said, but the whole the Ecclesiastes reading, here's one who has labored with wisdom and knowledge and skill, and yet to another who has not labored over it, he must leave property. What the Ecclesiastes is saying is here's someone who's worked hard all his life to build a nest egg. He's made his fortune. And now he's upset because now that he's at the end of his life, he's got to give it to his, good for nothing layabout son who didn't earn a penny of it. Or maybe it's a decent son, but nevertheless, he's got to give it to someone who didn't work to earn all this stuff. We all have to leave behind our stuff to someone else that didn't earn it the way we did. For what profit comes to a man from all the toil and anxiety of heart with which he has labored under the sun? All his days, sorrow and grief are his occupation. Even at night, his mind is not at rest. For some people, their life is a constant struggle, a constant yearning for more. Like some people, their worry and sorrow is about just providing enough. And that's not a bad thing. That's providing enough for your family. But then there are some people who worry and sorrow because they want more than they need. And that's, I think, what he's saying.
Although this kind of reminded me of the Mary and Martha gospel that we just heard last week. So last week or the week before?
Yeah, last week.
Last week, where, Jesus says to Martha, you're worried about many things. You're worried and anxious about many things. It seems to me that, like, here in Ecclesiastes, we see the same thing. It's staying up at night, troubled and anxious. Like, God doesn't want us, wants us to trust him, to trust that he will feed us, that he'll take care of us. That, I mean, isn't that the whole point of the manna in the desert? Trust that God will provide.
You have to work, but you also have to trust.
Right. Like, it's the anxiety. It's the lack of confidence. You know, work as hard as you can, then trust that God will take care of what and make up for what you can't.
Yeah. There's also a bit of the sense of lack of generosity in the sense of you and I have had some debates with people online about the whole topic of student loan forgiveness. And I don't want to get into the whole thing now, but some people's argument has been, you know, I worked hard and I paid my loans and I suffered and I sacrificed. And why should someone else not have to pay off their loans? And I think both of us have agreed that, you know, some people, they have various reasons why they didn't have the advantages you had or the opportunities you had to pay things off.
Or they had crises and problems. Sometimes people get sick and they have medical debt, or they lose a job and then they have time when they're unemployed. Like, you don't know what kinds of issues, like, was it a sick child? Was it an unexpected pregnancy? Like, the reasons why people haven't paid off their debt could very well be, if you knew the full story,
right,
you might agree that they deserve mercy.
Or, and regardless of whether they have good reasons or not, you know, like, you can have good policy arguments about whether it's good for our society, our culture, our country to forgive $1 trillion in student debt. You can have arguments about that. It's the arguments about whether it's fair. Is it fair? Why should they get something for free if I didn't get it for free? And that's not a good question. I mean, like, especially in light of these readings, you know, you got what you got, and someone else, like, it doesn't harm you in personally for someone else to get something you didn't get. Be grateful for them. Be happy for them that they got something. You've gotten what you've got and you are doing however you're doing. Why be mad that someone else? It's a type of envy and jealousy is what it is. And I think it's an unhealthy, spiritually unhealthy attitude.
Like the workers who worked all day in the hot sun.
Right.
You get mad at those who came at the last hour
and got paid the full day's wage. You know, they got mad at the boss. Hey, it's my money. I can be generous if I want to. So let's talk about Father Matt's homily, because he had some really good topics.
He started off talking about winning the lottery.
What an interesting providential timing that is, that huge $1.2 billion lottery was taking place this very same week. So everybody's minds was on winning the lottery. Although, if I'm that guy in Illinois who won, and if he's a churchgoer, like maybe Catholic, this would be a very interesting mass to sit in the very next day after winning that lottery. Right.
So yeah, Father Matt talked about having, you know, the pie in the sky dreams that we all have. Like,
and we're all so very generous in our dreams.
Yes, he said, yeah, we're always very generous with the imaginary money that we haven't won. But he started thinking, you know, like, realistically, if he did win, it would be nice to, you know, be generous with it, but it would cause problems. It would
upend your life.
It would cause problems, divisions, people showing up, asking for money. Like,
cousins coming out of the woodwork.
Yeah. It would not be easy. Like, it imposes, that kind of winning imposes its own new
burdens and anxieties. And,
right. Yes. He says, the thing is that we all have things that we really, really want. We want something really badly. And when we get it, we're happy for a while, but
often.
Often. then something,
the newness wears off.
The newness wears off. A newer model comes out the day after you bought something.
Yep.
Or you realize it wasn't what you actually wanted.
It wasn't as good as you thought it was going to be.
Right. We've all had that experience where we wanted the thing and we wanted the thing and we finally got it. And it just wasn't as exciting as we built it up in our heads. And so basically, really, the ultimate point was that our hearts are fickle. We think that we're going to be happy as long as we can get the shiny thing. But no matter what it is, even if we do get it, we're never really going to be truly content. Like, we will never be satisfied.
You know, another Hamilton reference there.
Yes. There. because really, although these are genuine goods, they are not what our heart ultimately wants. They don't satisfy. Mm-hmm. So he talked about like the.
Can I give you a quote from Star Trek on this?
Right. Okay.
So in the episode where Spock has, it's the Amok time where he's the wedding with his fiance, and then she rejects him and wants him to fight Kirk, and he thinks he's killed Kirk. Spoilers for a 60-year-old episode, and he says to the guy who's basically replaced him and cuckolded him there, he says, "Ston, she is yours. After a time, you may find that having is not so pleasing a thing after all as wanting. It is not logical, but it is often true." I mean,
having it isn't as good as the desire to have it.
Yes.
Right. What I really liked to hear was Father Matt's next point, though. He said that the things that we want, we find ourselves wanting most often: power, money, pleasure, and honor.
That's Aquinas's categories of the four things that are most in desired.
Right. These are not in themselves bad things. It is not bad to want power or to want honor or to want money or to want pleasure.
Yeah. Power to do good. Power to be you know, to be the boss of something and to run something. There's nothing inherently wrong with that.
Right. We're not Puritans, he says. We are not supposed to, like, put off all desire for any of these things.
Yeah, the goods of this world are still good.
Right. But the thing is that none of them are a substitute for God. Love of money is the root of all evil.
Right. He emphasized that. Like, people often misquote scripture. It's not that the money is the root of all evil. The love of money is the root of, and in fact, I've heard it said the inordinate love of money is the root of all evil.
Right.
Money is just a tool. You use it to buy food for your family, put a roof over your heads. So money itself.
Or to be a philanthropist and to do good for others.
Right. It's just a tool. It's what you do with it. It's your attitude toward it.
Right. Most of all, making it into a substitute for God.
Mm-hmm.
Any of these things, when we make them into our gods, we are not going to be satisfied, because that's not what our hearts are meant long for.
My heart will not rest until it rests in you, is Augustine. Right.
Our hearts long for something more than a full bank account. The deepest
longing of our heart. Yes.
Right. And he talked about Ecclesiastes being about King Solomon, and who himself did enjoy wealth and power and money and pleasure and honor. But that at the end of his life, Solomon looks at all of these wonderful things that he has, and he sees that they are all vanity.
Mm-hmm.
I liked his gloss on the Hebrew here, talking about it being like wind or like a bubble or like fireworks.
Yes, as you said, Bishop Barron compares it to fireworks, where it's all very exciting in the moment and pop, and now it's gone.
Right. It's something that's here and then gone. It's vanishing. It's fleeting. That's all of the things of this world are fleeting. They are, none of them are permanent.
As they say, you can't take a U-Haul to the cemetery after you die.
So everything, when we set our hearts on the things of this world, we will be unsatisfied. But when we set our heart on God, then we can be satisfied. When what we want most of all is God's will to be done, then we can actually get our heart's desire.
Right.
But only if our hearts really desire the things that will satisfy them. Like, we can set our heart's desire for things that will not satisfy, or we can set our hearts to desire that which will satisfy. And that's really challenging.
Mm-hmm.
Because we do get really fixated on all of these things that are very pleasurable or good, but not ultimately good.
Right. And he did make also another comment about like what God loves in us is when he is seeing Christ in us. And I don't think he was saying like he only loves people who are explicitly Christian, but was saying more like the more that Christ shines through us, the more that God sees Christ in us through our actions, through our life, our faith, the closer we are to God. I mean, that's when we stand before God at our judgment, will he see Christ in us? That's the question. And that's the one you're going to have to answer there. He's not going to care about what your bank account was, whether you had power in this world, whether you were satisfied with the pleasures of this world, you had a full belly or whatever. He's going to ask, did you love? Did Christ live within you? It is no longer like in Galatians. It is no longer I who live, but Christ who lives within me. Does Christ live within me? That's the question. That we all have to answer every day until the moment of our death. So, and he also made another point, take care to guard against all greed, it says in this. And he emphasized all greed, not just money greed, all kinds of greed. Avoid all kinds of greed. So it was really good. Father Matt's homilies are always on the ball, and I'm always... It always holds my attention, which I can't say for every homily I ever hear. Sorry to all the priests out there, but if the bellwether mark for me is, do you hold my attention the whole time? And if you do, that to me is a good homily. Anything else on that? I think that covers it pretty well. So before we go, we want to take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Buck and Julianne T., Mark A., Gwen L., David B., and Roger and Julie J. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest, and you can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. So that's it from us. You'll find links from our discussion in our show notes at sqpn.com/bets. That's B-E-T-T-S. Send your feedback at the StarQuest Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia. Send an email to bets@sqpn.com or visit the StarQuest Discord community at sqpn.com/Discord. Write a review at Apple Podcasts and share the podcast with your friends to help us grow our community and reach more listeners. Until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest. Here's another show on the StarQuest Network you're sure to enjoy, The Secrets of Technology. Find it wherever fine podcasts are found or at sqpn.com/technology.